I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Smashbox TV's podcast 501.
On the north side of 500 now.
Finally.
On the way to 1,000.
Yes.
Should we start the 1,000 countdown pretty soon?
I was just going to say, what comes next? 1,000 total podcasts by us or the next solar eclipse?
1,000 podcasts. Because the next solar eclipse, well, in the continental U.S. is like 20 years from now. So we've got a ways to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
And last now, isn't like South America, who has one in later this year, next year? I don't know. There's another one coming.
I think Australia has one in like 2 or 3 years.
Like, all right.
Right.
Start
over.
Start making your disc golf plans. Sure. Make sure you get yourselves over there. And we've survived whatever end of the world or rapture
have you been
was
having,
coming as well.
Yeah. Have you been having eye issues since you've stared at the eclipse like me?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't spot the problem. Yeah, I don't know.
And as far as the rapture, there's no proof that it didn't happen.
Oh, that's true. We could be in hell or something now.
No, I'm just saying nobody got picked up. we're all miserable people.
That's fair enough.
Someone looked down and went, maybe later.
We'll pass. We'll pass. Maybe next eclipse. you'll be worth picking up. I don't know how that all works, but we're glad you guys are here. Assuming you've survived one or both of these natural phenomenons here. We're here for 501. As I said, one of the biggest things, or I would say the biggest thing going on in disc golf for sure, was this weekend's United States College Disc Golf Championships, and so many players, so many different divisions, so many different storylines. I applaud anyone if you found a way to keep up with all of them. I wasn't able to keep up with everything, so we figured let's go right to the source. We'd go right to the man that would know everything that's going on. That's your tournament director, Chad Sullivan. He's going to join us right now. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you. And really, I think of just like every major TD, every Worlds and majors that takes place, and whether it's a U.S. championship or a world championship or a disc golf pro tour event, whatever, we're talking less than 48 hours or so from the event completing. You're upright. You're seemingly, still all mentally and physically there. How do you recover after hosting nearly 500 people and being in charge of all that?
Well, ironically, the way we decided to recover on Sunday after the final day, we went and played about 30 holes of golf at Winthrop.
Oh, okay.
Fortunately, we had some golf carts. It made it easier. But yeah, we just wanted to take it easy and go play one of the hardest courses in the world.
Yeah. But I mean, I suppose after we all kind of get that way after watching for so long, and you get that itch again. Everybody does it, you know. I can't count the number of times that after doing a broadcast, there was a night where I was like, "Is there time? Like, could I get out and you go out in the backyard and I putt for a little bit?" And that usually cures it a little bit. But to be able to go and play Winthrop, I don't know, man. I think I would take that opportunity.
Yeah, we had to do it. Watching those student athletes just take down the course all week, it was, you know, tough to not be able to grab the discs and go play a few of those holes.
To be youthful again, too, watching some of these youngsters run around taking it all in. So let's back up a little bit before we get into all the details. Johnny V and I have been around long enough that when there was college disc golf, even at UW-Milwaukee in 1998, I think officially is when we started the club.
Somewhere there's a disc over there.
Yeah, that was a very different world. That was us getting excited about this, you know, getting four of us together to officially become a club, which I'll put in air quotes. And then the university thankfully, after begging and pleading, gave us a few hundred dollars during like spring break that we were able to apply toward gas and a few entry fees. Very different world. Walk us through where you became heavily involved with college disc golf to now being the tournament director. Walk us through some of those stages for you and those years.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, a couple of years ago, I came into the mix via Jonathan Poole and the USDGC crew. We came into contact with each other through mutual friends and people in the disc golf world. And then we've been, you know, we've talked together about USDGC, and naturally it turned into a bit more. And as you know, you prove what you can help make happen and certainly bring to the table. Jonathan and the crew at US Disc Golf invited me to come on board as a event director role full time, and being able to, you know, make a career in disc golf at this point is pretty incredible.
Did you have your sights ever set on college disc golf? You know, knowing your involvement, thinking about the USDGC, what that event is meant not only to the area and to Innova and to all of disc golf, but did you have any idea where your path was going to take you to get you here?
Honestly, absolutely no idea that that's where it would end up. You know, the way it came through, we started working together in USDGC, and then one of my best friends in the world, Brian Short, DJ Heck Yeah, as the disc golf world knows him.
Yep.
He went out to college disc golf national championship back in, I believe it was 2019, and it was at the IDGC. Mm-hmm. And he went out there, DJed, you know, kind of hosted some fun evening activities and took it all in. He came back and he said, that was incredible. I don't know how or why, but, you know, someday you're going to be running college disc golf, or at least a part of it. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he linked me and college disc golf together. And I said, there's no chance that, you know, that doesn't sound like the thing that's going to bring me into disc golf at that time. And, here we are, you know, just got done with a week long major event.
So, explain to everyone some of the development, or what you know of the growth and development of college disc golf to where it is today. Because, and what I'll quickly preface that by saying is, again, we had, you know, just these inklings of a couple of us getting together, and it was never taken very seriously. And then at a certain point, an explosion began. So insert like where you started getting some of those experiences.
Sure. Yeah. I think, so last year was my first actual experience with college disc golf, and the national championship, went up to North Cove in North Carolina mm-hmm. to be part of the tournament team, really just to take it all in. I had helped with some admin work on the email end and things like that, getting the tournament ready. At the time, John Baker was, really doing everything college disc golf. I mean, he was running the college disc golf and the membership portion. He's answering all the emails. He's TDing the national championship, which, you know, coming off of just having done that, to have been juggling all of those balls at the same time, I can't even imagine. Hats off to him for doing it for so many years. Honestly, you know, there's over 1,000 people aiming, you know, questions and just anything really at you. And that's got to be, you know, overwhelming in the moments. But all of that hard work got it to where it's at. And then this past year, you know, got offered the position to run the actual event as the event director. And I was all about it. As soon as, you know, being able to take it all in last year really was where the magic kind of became apparent to me. You know, there's something about the school spirit and, you know, disc golf in general. We all know that it's just such a special sport. You know, it brings everybody together, the community aspect, and then to be able to tap into that with, you know, team disc golf. There's something about team golf that just gets everybody fired up. You know, you're playing for more than just yourself. You're playing for colors. There's the amateurism in play. You know, they're not playing for big purses, and sponsors aren't putting up tens of thousands of dollars to get people excited for the event. It's just built in. You know, you get Ohio State, Michigan walking around on the course together. It's just a vibe. You know what I mean? You feel it.
Yeah. Now, explain the kind of the process for how people arrive here, who's there, how they got there, what that means versus others that aren't, and who's playing for what. Like, kind of explain, you know, give us your the breakdown of what people should be expecting. Because it feels daunting, honestly. It feels like a lot of things.
It is and it isn't. You know, honestly, I think anybody who's involved in a disc golf at the community level knows the disc golf club journey, right? You just get a couple of people together that all have, you know, the best intentions of making the courses and the groups and setting up weeklies and just getting together to play disc golf. And honestly, that's exactly the same thing that happens at the college disc golf level. You get guys and girls on campus, off campus, that all are there to go to the same university, and you get disc golf involved. And it's the same organic, you know, kind of process where it's like, all right, we're going to get together, we're going to have a Wednesday night league. And then once you get everybody playing together, and it's like, hey, let's get a team together. And you know, the next level is just trying to spread the word on the availability of it. You know, it's huge at this point. We just got done hosting 768 student athletes, you know, in Rock Hill, South Carolina. But meanwhile, there's so many universities and colleges and schools that have no idea that college disc golf exists, and getting all those things linked together is going to be a really cool, you know, moving into the future.
What is it like for some to get involved? Let's just say you go to college, your school's not at all, you know, at all involved with the college disc golf scene. What does that take? What is that? What are some of those steps? And dare I say, is everyone welcome? Is everyone eligible?
Absolutely. Everybody is welcome to get into the college disc golf mix. The first thing I'd say is, you know, anybody listening that knows a college student or even faculty, you know, boosters, supporters, if you're an alumni of a university and you can reach out and say, hey, this is something that's available, just send them straight to collegediscgolf.com. There's, you know, an FAQ page that's got all of the basic questions. You know, how do I start a club? There's an entire starter guide that John Baker and the team built out over the years, because they've done it. You know, most of the people involved in college disc golf came from college disc golf. So they're trying to, over the years, just build on all of those experiences and, you know, just keep adding to that playbook of, you know, the journey can be so different too, you know, and you asked earlier about how you get into it and how it evolves. You know, you get, you know, the Emporia States, kind of a unique setup where they are obviously very aware and engaged in disc golf in Emporia, Kansas. And so Emporia State University went out and grabbed a head coach in Eric McCabe, and they created, you know, there's true recruitment involved. There's grants and scholarships and things like that to support the students who decide, I'm going to go to this school because they have a disc golf team. And, you know, to think of where disc golf has come from, and to think that, you know, there are actual high school students out there making life decisions on where they want to go, and they're literally considering disc golf as the number one thing that helps them decide, kind of blows my mind.
I mean, nothing for nothing, and to sound old and dated, I'll say this is what everyone dreamed of, right?
Right.
Like 20 and 30 and 40 years ago, when we started thinking about how big disc golf could get or getting excited about the idea of it, just uttering the phrase like, oh, could you imagine getting a disc golf scholarship? Like, that was just a tongue in cheek or a crazy hypothetical or a, you know, just like a not serious statement. And now here we are living it. In 100% living that reality, which does say a lot about the organization, and it says a lot about obviously how much disc golf has just grown. Pardon my ignorance, but there can't be a higher rated coach than Eric McCabe out there in terms of sheer PDGA rating, is there?
If there was, I don't know. There's certainly, I want to say, you know, the world champion aspect, he can hold that trophy high and say, come play with us.
That too.
Yeah. I've seen this movie before. You want to win a championship.
Are there any other notable names for coaches? I think Seth Muncy, he's doing
involved with Boise State.
Seth
probably?
Muncy's jumping in with Boise State. They've got a cool program fired up there. Tim Barr and Milligan University. I know y'all are familiar with Tim and his work over the years. But there's tons and tons of support from the different manufacturers, the different universities and programs. You've got the professionals supporting the game. Paul Ulibarri, shout out to him. He went out of his way to come out and join the players at the player party. We took over the American Cornhole League headquarters in Rock Hill and had a really cool opening ceremony at the Winthrop Arena. And then we moved it on to the player party the next day. And then Paul came out again on Friday night and hosted a putting clinic. I didn't take a real head count. We were setting up Glow on the course right behind it. So then they transitioned from Paul's putting clinic straight into a night of Glow, and just seeing them. It's just such a cool energy. I challenge anybody in disc golf to come out, whether it's media or just fans, locals to the Charlotte Rock Hill area, put it on the calendar for next year, because you just tap into something extra seeing them. It's the most pure form of the sport, I would have to say. They're out there just to have fun with the boys and girls on the team. It's just super, super cool to see.
Well, and like you said, there no one's walking. I mean, obviously there's accolades and there's pride for you and, as an individual, but then for you and your entire team and your college, but no one's walking away with a $10,000, paycheck. And, like you said, they're playing for a lack of a better term, all the right reasons.
Sure.
And everything that goes along with it and being involved with it. I can understand how that is almost like a breath of fresh air. Maybe we compare it to, we go to the Olympics sometimes and you see there's a different reason that you're playing for when you're out there.
I was reminded, like Little League World Series, the Final Four, March Madness, there's something about that junior college athletics and competition that it just draws you in a little bit, not necessarily more, but just in a different way.
So what you were just saying immediately prompts a question, and I think this is also said of the USDGC, especially now that we're 25 years in. Is there a chance of the event and the final, so to speak, moving out of that area? And I know we've had different courses, but is it locked in to that area? And then I'll follow it up and say, and that time of year, is that all logistically where it just all makes the most sense indefinitely?
Yeah. Right now we are 100% looking to host the event next year in Rock Hill again, building on the success, you point out 25 years of USDGC and now the Throw Pink Women's Disc Golf Championship and being able to tap into a place where a lot of the groundwork is done. It's the foundation's laid. You've got courses, you've got humans that are engaged and passionate and want to help. You've got sponsors, it's just having all of that footprint there. And of course we'd certainly be open to conversations and, if somebody else wants to host or if there's something else to look at for the future. But right now Rock Hill is where it's at, and going to definitely build on an incredible year this year.
And I know that there are other colleges that have disc golf courses. There's a handful that have them on campus, but that it feels right to have it on a college campus. It feels right to have everybody there. And I can't think of another college campus that has the quality of a course that Winthrop does. And I know there's a few out there throughout the country, but
tough to beat.
It would be really tough to beat. Yeah.
Well, and so I'll follow that up with and say, is it that Winthrop specifically is looking to be an integral part of a final round of a final weekend, you know, because I know when you have that many competitors, you're talking about 800 of them, you have to be maneuvering and you have to be able to adjust and work with other properties and municipalities and nearby areas and courses. What is that? What are those conversations and that relationship like?
Yeah, that's really where it was born from, you know, seeing the success that disc golf, you know, celebrates every year in the fall with the USDGC and Throw Pink, and the university recognizes the opportunity to continue to be a home of disc golf. You know, this was officially the first year that the college national championship was hosted at a college, you know, so having it on a campus that's already part of history as far as the game goes. And then the city of Rock Hill, Visit York County, you know, as soon as this got floated to the idea of, you know, the community hosting this event, you know, Jonathan had all the right people listening and their attention and said, hey, let's do this. And, you know, here we are. And I don't think anybody wants to see it move away, especially in the near future. It's something that's, was so cool to see come together this year, and being familiar with the property and everything, and just seeing it transform from what we know as, you know, Winthrop and the arena, and see that disc golf there in Rock Hill and specifically at Winthrop can be even more, you know, that we had an entire 18-hole course go in at, the former golf course right there. You know, you're maybe familiar with the gauntlet hole, you know, that was a piece of that was used for the first hole of what was called Winthrop Meadows. And it hosted, almost all the divisions in play, and it was an incredible course. It's staying there for the foreseeable future. And we were so excited to see all the other courses. Westminster Park, we had 218 holes out there, and we had Camp Canaan, which is, they're both, you know, a couple hundred yards away from each other on different sides of the Catawba River, which ironically is the same river that we just got done playing last year at North Cove. So
wow, little, okay,
you know, something going on there. The universe is moving us down the river.
Yeah, it really is. And I know this logistics are always a nightmare, but this is it's really eight events is what I'm counting on the PDGA website, eight X majors, which makes me wonder, because I think a lot of people wouldn't mind watching this live. We know,
sure.
I mean, we know Rock Hill has the capabilities now. I mean, we've been broadcasting there for almost 10 years, maybe more, mm-hmm. Off and on. What are the logistics, or what are the realistic odds that we're going to see this in a live capacity in the next year or so? I mean, I think that there's so many people. There's so many built-in fans to these people. I mean, you've got colleges. And again, we're disc golf. We're not the NC. We're not, you know, the Final Four. We're not pulling in, you know, a couple hundred thousand viewers. But I'm sure there are people on these teams maybe that can't make the trip, that are fans or that are parents that would love to see their kids that can't make the trip. And there is good post-production out there, so I want to, you know, give a shout out to that. But are we going to see this as a live event anytime soon?
I would love to see it. I think, you know, like you were saying, the, you know, the team aspect in play here, the universities, the programs, all of these schools and universities have fans all over the country and all over the world. You know, we had Canadian teams. We had a team from the United Kingdom join us this year. So you're, you know, what's the natural next one? Finland, Estonia, Sweden. Let's get those countries represented. Bring them out, fly them into Rock Hill, and do the thing. If, you know, live is on the docket for the future, I'm all about it. We'd love to talk about that.
Well, let's follow that up and talk about what is produced or available, who some mm-hmm. of the media partners are. I know you know, kind of just have a standing invite as well, but how did those conversations go as to who's covering what and where is it hosted, things of that nature?
Yeah, it followed the PDGA major kind of competition guidelines. You know, we had worked together, collaborated with our U.S. disc golf team, the Innova disc golf team, and the PDGA. So we've got some awesome post-produced content on PDGA's YouTube channel. You can jump on there and see it. That was put together by the Gatekeeper and Ace Run Pro teams. They were on site all week, you know, love working with those teams. We get to do that at a bunch of different events. So, you know, seeing friendly faces all come together and see them also, you know, realize the magic that's going on. You know, it's it's bigger than almost everything else in disc golf, in my opinion. I really do believe that there's something there that's just waiting to go boom. The college aspect, the teams, you know, the think of college football and March Madness, you know, add disc golf into the mix with those kind of vibes and you got what you got this week. You know, go on YouTube and watch this, the golf. It's crazy. You couldn't have written more perfect endings to some of the competition, you know, playoffs, 80-foot putts to, you know, take home the wins, and it's just unreal. It was unreal.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that in just a few seconds. I've already got some things queued up. But and maybe this is just my ignorance. Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, how are those decided by the schools? Is that like sure. Because I know obviously here University of Wisconsin, Madison, Division 1 football, Division 1 hockey, volleyball, how are they decided here at the collegiates?
I would compare it, you know, March Madness keeps coming up. I would certainly compare it to that. You know, you go through the season, there's a regional qualifying process. It's very similar to the USDGC and Throw Pink qualifying method. You know, it's regionals throughout the country. Each event has a designated amount of spots for D1 and D2. And once you play your way in, essentially, you got to go earn it. And then as you get farther into the season, D1 and D2 bids have been earned. And then the D3 division is just kind of a free for all. Think of it like a wide open division. So if you didn't qualify for D1 or D2, or if your program has a bunch of players and, you know, you have more than just the four that it takes for the starting roster on teams, you can come down with another one. You know, you can, you had NC States and Emporia State. Liberty comes down with a literal tour bus full of disc golfing humans all wearing the same colors. It's super cool to see that. But yeah, it's an awesome, you know, kind of finding its way. Honestly, we're going through. We're not afraid to try things. You know, it's at the end of the day, we're certainly aware that we don't have all of the answers right away. Kind of trial and error. And it worked out really well this year. I think we're going to go to the drawing board in the off season and kind of look at where we did things well, where things could be improved, and you know the team, anything led by Jonathan Poole is going to be doing it right.
And along those lines, and I didn't give you anything to warn you about this or prep, but do you have any of the numbers for, we'll say, the team that brought the most competitors? And then I guess the follow-up to that is, what is the female participation compared to, I was going to say MPO, FPO. I don't think it just breaks down in that capacity. So male to female, what are the numbers like? What do we see in college disc golf? Is it similar to like a 10% turnout and participation?
It is.
Is it much greater?
Yeah, right now, I mean, it's right around that 10 to 15% mark.
Okay.
Yeah, we have things in place to kind of foster that along, in my opinion. You know, the women's teams only needs two players to make a team versus the four it takes for the, you know, it is the mixed division officially, but D1, D2, and D3. And then also we offer an individual women's competition division. So the men's side or the mixed side, you can't just come down and represent your school individually in that way. But for the women's, we offer that for, you know, obvious reasons. We don't want to beholden you to find a four person team just to get yourself down here with your school colors on to compete. And seeing some of the women take advantage of that is really cool. And I do think that that's going to help grow the division into the future.
Yeah. You always wonder where some of these numbers and their participation really starts. And I feel like at the college level, what a great chance for us to break through to get past that kind of standard number of 10, 8, 10, 15%, you know, as early as possible for us to find a way to get past those numbers and whatever we can do to continue to recruit and encourage more women to come participate. Do you know the school that ultimately brought the most amount of people in just in raw numbers of participants?
Liberty, it's not even close. Yeah, okay. The program that Coach Steve Bowman has built over there is absolutely unreal. The support that they have locally at the university, like I was saying earlier, they literally roll up in buses and they just keep coming out. And, you know, okay. you get, it's just person after person. I want to say they had somewhere around 30 people okay. down here representing the school. They had three teams in D3. So, and they had two, they had a team in D1, D2, D3 had two or three teams. I believe it was three. And then the women's side of the field was represented with Liberty colors. They ended up taking it down in the team side. So they're extremely well represented, and I encourage anybody interested in your earlier questions on how do you get this thing going, reach out to Steve at Liberty, and he'll give you some cheat codes for sure.
That's awesome to see. I feel like it was maybe a Liberty women's team I filmed and watched win 3, 4, 5 years ago, whenever it was, when I was at the IDGC. Are there any surprises, even as I, you know, look at a few of the top finishers as Johnny is going through a couple of the results?
Any Cinderella stories? I mean, we're not in March anymore. We're in April, but we just finished up with March Madness. Was there anything that any team that surprised everybody this year, like came out of nowhere to play better than they were expected, we'll say?
I would say Benji Zorn. He took down the D1 individual side of the event. It was an electric final round for him. We did a final nine around the lake. So if, you know, if you're familiar with the loop they played for the Legends Skins yep. match last year, creates this perfect, you know, loop of holes that are just iconic. It touches the lake, bamboo hole 17 mm-hmm. from USDGC. That was hole 14 for the week, and 18, you know, that whole stretch coming down and seeing what he was able to lay down. I believe he was on third card and he put down a heater. He was 3 or 4 under par in that final nine to get into the clubhouse. And, he watched the lead card come down the fairway on 18 with, actually he did not watch. I will definitely say that he was, at the first tee box. I do believe when I was walking by in the madness, all the people spectating everything, I saw him over there just getting his mind right, getting ready for a possible playoff, and they didn't end up catching him. He came over, and I mean, he cut, it's out on social media for sure, he probably cut the best disc golf speech I've ever heard. You know, he kept receipts for some things, he had inspiration throughout, you know, wow. the season, came down and threw down some super good disc golf to take home a title.
Sweet. Yeah, and Benjamin Zorn from Ferris State University.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Ferris State shouted him out on their social channels, which, you know, seeing that's where it gets that, you know, that validation that I do think that we as disc golfers seek out whenever we can find it. Right. You know, we go out and pour our heart and soul into the sport, and at the end of the day, there's not a whole bunch of people that are clamoring to see, like, you know, oh wow, disc golf, you know, congratulations on doing that. And it's the disc golf community looking for, you know, those people that are like, man, this actually is really cool. This is a special sport. And, you know, being able to get it into the eyeballs of an entire university in Ferris State, and they turn around, you know, they'll see him on campus and hopefully give him some shout outs.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk a little bit about the results. We'll talk about the D1 singles, as you said, Benjamin Zorn, who was only, I don't say only, but throw out in quotes right now, rated 971, beats out Ilkin Groh and Benjamin Wagner, both 1,000-plus rated players. And Terry, you're familiar with Ilkin from, I believe, U.S. Amateurs, correct?
Yeah, U.S. Ams and Am Worlds.
And Am Worlds,
where he was taking care of business, or Junior Worlds and whatnot over the last couple of years. So no surprise to see that name there.
Yeah, tied for fourth place, Clemson and Oklahoma Baptist University, Shane McCullen and James Owens. I never know if I should just rattle off the name or the name and the school, because it's a team event. I mean, this is the singles really event, but they are part of a team. So sixth place, Nathan Hogg from Virginia Tech, tied for a three-way tie for seventh place. We got Jack Lang from UNC Charlotte, Ethan Darby from Taylor University, and Zachary Crawford from Mississippi State. So some really awesome just play in general. Like you said, winning by one stroke, I can only imagine the nerves he had to be feeling there sitting on that hole one, because we've, again, most of us know Winthrop inside and out, and just it's got to be an amazing feeling to be able to take that down for sure. So I'm gonna seek out that victory speech after the show.
Oh, you gotta go see it. Yeah, it was incredibly emotional, and you know, it just tapped into that vibe that team sports, that getting it done, you know, the Remember the Titans, the sports movie moments. It felt like somebody just sat there and just wrote it all out in the script, and we watched it play out, and like, no, this was real life.
Well, I mean, this goes hand in hand with, you know, and I know I talked about kind of our early days, but even just the overall evolution, kids are not only more comfortable, generally speaking, in front of cameras and social media, they've obviously been growing up with it, but having these opportunities to now play in front of cameras, to then have social media content created around what they're doing, is just already giving them a head start. Your Pauls and Rickies and Pages and Schultzes, like all of those guys, you know, were taking off of their 9-to-5 jobs, or some of those guys were taking off their 9-to-5 jobs in a mill or a factory to go play for 3 days on a weekend. And it wasn't all about, you know, going through this on a every single day basis and working with a camera or a bunch of phones in your face. So it's just even that the head start that some of these players are getting on both the men's and women's side is incredible. I mean, that's all part of this obvious evolution of them getting younger and more success at an early age to then become that much more of a polished professional by the time they're 21 or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the college, you know, the student athlete aspect of it is so cool to be a part of, you know, like you're saying, the professional side, kind of, you know, grooming yourself to be a better pro, be a better, you know, athlete in the sport of disc golf, I think is certainly something that, you know, those guys and girls at the top are angling that way. Absolutely. But I think there, you know, there's something else there too with just being able to, you know, kind of learn and find yourself, whether, you know, through sports, you certainly learn a lot about yourself in those moments and you take them into the careers, you know, just like sports. The kids on the Little League team aren't going to be playing in Major League Baseball. You know, at the end of the day, they're just going to enjoy the time that they have on the field and kind of move into something else. And the college disc golf offers that memory making, experience building kind of opportunity. You know, we have the Wolfpack, I call them. It's former NC State players that they go out of their way to mark it on the calendar every year to come be a part of the TD staff. So yeah, shout out to those guys. Seeing that, you know, John Baker, he played college disc golf. He's here running the memberships. And Alexis Kerman, I know you know the name. You know, she's joined the team this year. She's a rock star, you know, on and off the course. She's been killing it, doing some of the admin and communications with the players and being able to bring them back and kind of, you know, they've seen it. They've been on the other side of that rope, so to speak. And they can tell you like, hey, this, you know, I was there for 4 years. This didn't really work very well. Let's look at it. And it's like, oh, wow, we just got better. You know, just bringing them into the mix.
And there are, I love the fact that this event is a team-based event because we talk so much about teams in disc golf at the pro level, but really they're sponsors. They're sponsorships. Yes, sure. You're on Team Discraft. You're on Team Innova, Team MVP, whatever. It's such a loosely labeled team. It's somebody who's sponsored by the same person as you. There's not the same camaraderie that you get with a team. In fact, it's funny because we don't get to do teams in disc golf as much as I think a lot of people would like to see. We have the President's Cup. You've got the World's Doubles usually, and there I think there's another Doubles World Championship these days, but even this weekend, we've had a party here at the house. A friend of mine came over and he had a shirt on. It was a disc golf team shirt from a team event here in Wisconsin. And some of the other friends were like, oh, are you guys on the same disc golf team? And it's like, well, no, it's not really how it's played. Usually this is a one off. And so many people don't get that team and spirit and feeling.
Sure.
And that's what this is. That's 100% what this is. And to be able to lift up or feel the weight of an entire team is pretty amazing.
Team disc golf is electric. And I mean, I know, you know, certain areas celebrate it with like kind of that team, you know, you get the New England team challenge. They've got 147 pools at this point. There's teams, multiple teams for every course. And the team aspect is really where I think that it's different. It's where it's kind of the heartbeat of the event and the college disc golf in general. The singles and the individual is certainly awesome. You know, golf's an individual sport at the end of the day. It's how it's you against the course, right? But when you turn that around and you say, hey, no, the course is there, but it's you against them. And you're wearing orange, they're wearing purple, and there's a whole bunch of people back home at school that are cheering y'all on, and you're representing something bigger. That's where, like I was saying earlier, the magic happens. And it's so cool to see, you know, it's something that I think that really can grow outside college disc golf too. You know, like you were saying, there's gotta be some team disc golf, you know, opportunities out there for somebody to bring up, whether it's an event with, you know, different divisions or whatever. I think team disc golf is untapped at the end of the day. I think that would be an awesome place for the sport to go.
Yeah, I agree. And we can talk a little bit about the team championship here. The 2024 Collegiate Nationals, it's a D1 team. An exciting, really exciting event and finish. We saw UNC Charlotte and University of Cincinnati go into a playoff.
Unreal.
Can you break down a little bit exactly what or how it went? I've got a little video here, so I'll play it when we're ready to go. Awesome. Go ahead and break down how it's going.
Yeah, I'll try to set the stage on this one. I was watching the scoreboards like everybody else. You know, they had, I believe it was a 4-shot lead going into the final round. UNC Charlotte had kind of been just torching the course. They were the number one ranked team going into it. They brought an undefeated season. I think they were 7 or 8-0 in the tournaments that they played and competed at. So they came in with targets on their back. You know, no doubt about it. All those other teams were looking at them, just kind of licking their chops, hoping they could take down the big dogs. And they went out there on that final round and got caught. The NC State was chasing them down. You had Cincinnati, the defending champions. They've been there. They've done it. So that came into play immediately. You know that it's like, hey, we've done this. Like, they're scared. We've done this. We've hoisted the trophy. It came down to the literally the last hole. UNC Charlotte was down 2, and they had to get the eagle on what it was 18 for the event. A lot of people recognize this holes 3 and 4 over the years at USCGC. And they threw a sweet forehand that came up around the corner, and they had a couple putts at eagle. And this one doesn't quite get it done, but you know, everybody's holding their breath at this point. They got one more chance, and here it is. Let's watch it. To win it.
Fall into the hands of Glenn Pfister. Call this a 70-footer. For eagle.
I can't imagine the pressure he's feeling.
You could feel it there. It was crazy. You could cut that tension for sure.
He's dreamed of this moment here many times, I'm sure. Oh, back corner.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The whole place went nuts.
Well, except for the guys they were playing against. They didn't love it so much.
There's a shot, you know, shout out to the Cincinnati guys. They wow. You know, they were right there watching, and you can see them in the background right here, actually. They couldn't believe it.
Oh, hey, look at the guy, hands on head.
Yeah, like, what just happened?
Here we go. We're heading to number one, playoff. Like we were saying, you can't write a better script. And we headed to the first hole, which is 5 for USDGC and throw pink. It actually got split into a par 4 on that linear fairway down the right side of the lake. And then you played a par 3. The second hole was to that peninsula basket that we've been loving on the last couple of years here. And they ended up going to the beach hole, the Florida hole, so to speak. And UNC Charlotte parked it, and Cincinnati couldn't make the putt, and they tapped in for the dub. And it was awesome to see, you know, a playoff, a 3-hole playoff for the Division I national championship.
I just think about that moment. I mean, we talked about it a little bit with like the holy shot back in the day, but every disc golfer who's ever played has had that kind of dream in the back of your head. You're down by one, you need this to tie, or you're tied and you need this to win. It's a 70 footer, or, you know, or if you're in James Conrad, it's 247 or whatever that number is. And, but with this, as we said, every other instance, it's solo. It's not very often you get to really have that dream as a disc golfer to carry your team. Like, that's just not something we get to do. It's always it's always that solo feeling, like you've beat the other guy. Mm-hmm. But here, not only did you beat the other guys or women in this case, or men in this case, and women in other cases, you carried your team. Like, you,
sure.
I got a little bit of goosebumps when you saw the rest of his team rush him, because absolutely, that's normally a solo kind of feeling, and that we've always seen. We've seen a lot of people hit big putts for ties and wins, but you rarely see the rush of other people come at you like that when you hit that.
Absolutely wild to watch, you know, and they do for the teams, they do an alternate shot doubles format, which is pretty unique. I haven't seen it really anywhere else except for college disc golf, but it creates these pairs of shots, you know, and you saw it there. The first UNC Charlotte guy, he didn't make it, you know, and he's probably had the whole entire tournament on his shoulders in that moment. He's like, oh man, I didn't get it done. I let these guys down. And then you just get a second try, you know, like who doesn't love the idea, you know, player B, right?
Yeah, exactly.
they're really good. You know, player B is awesome. And we got to watch player B for UNC Charlotte step up there and just hand the putt. And I mean, the place went nuts. It was so cool, you know, to hear it, the roar, you know, being right there and hearing it echo. It was just storybook, you know, it echoed through the trees there of that iconic green. And then I can't even imagine across the lake, it had to have been so loud, kind of Augusta, you know, Masters kind of vibe.
So we talked earlier about, you know, I brought up the professionalism, the steps in which you know, these players are growing up and becoming pros and furthering their lives and their careers. But at the end of the day, there's also 800 college students. Not that we're trying to highlight any unsavory behavior, but they've got to be having some fun out there too, right? Like, what are some of the other activities in which we find these college kids out there having a good time?
Honestly, it was disc golf everywhere. You okay. know, like, that was my favorite. I'm sure there were some shenanigans. At the end of the day, you know, I would say more than half the field was over the age of 21.
Yeah, Terry, you and I've been to Rock Hill a few times. We've been known to find trouble.
they're going six wide in hotel rooms and yep, doing the yep. thing. We've all been there. You know,
yep.
Those are fond memories for a lot of people. And I think, you know, the coolest part was honestly coming in and out of the properties at Winthrop and Westminster after the tee time were done. You know, I'm looking at the course packed and I'm like, didn't the last card come in like 2 hours ago? It's like dinner time and they already played. They're out there playing more. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, the glow night. We set up glow at the Winthrop Meadows course and it sounded like people were out there playing late into the night, enjoying themselves. And that's what we do it. That's, you know, having the event experience, you know, it's not just necessarily all about the tournament, and it's fun to watch the highlights and the trophies get hoisted, but you got to believe that the other 766 people that didn't host that trophy had almost as good of a week as everybody else that did. You know, it's about those memory making opportunities, and hearing them speak about the week so fondly was really cool. Really cool. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking, is you'd almost have to try to not have a good time there. I mean, that would be the only way you can succeed, is if you were actively trying not to have a good time, because it feels like just heaven, you know, at that age, being 100%. Able to travel and play, to see all these other people from all over the country.
It's like a second spring break.
Yeah, exactly. It that's really why I is. Talked about the timing of it, is just how it brings all these people together, some of which they've seen in years past, some of which they'll go then see at an AM Worlds you know, on a tour or at some other big event, you know, somewhere else in the country as well for some of these competitors. That's got to be incredible. For someone that's maybe listening and wondering, well, how does this all work? I know we've got the FAQ out on the page and there's some details there, but if you had to guess, what does the typical out-of-pocket expense look like for most of these competitors? What would you say, you know, they're all, you know, selling candy bars to raise $500, or are a lot of them
for sure.
You know, funded? How does that work typically?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the programs have tapped into the grants and funds available at the school level. You know, where College Disc Golf lives in the kind of the intramural student activities mm-hmm. side of most of the universities. Some of them, like we were saying earlier, Emporia State has built an actual recognized athletic program in their athletic department. Mm-hmm. And seeing that, like at Liberty and Milligan and some of these other schools that are kind of taking it up a notch. But the rest of them are going out there and doing it. They're earning it. They're having fundraisers. They're hosting, you know, flex starts, and they're doing C-tier fundraiser events and things like that to get out there, you know. And I'm sure it's the most affordable major that I'm aware of at $125 a piece, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. So some of those other majors are getting in $200-$400 entry fees, and being able to offer that for, you know, just go out there and raise a couple bucks and get some sponsors, you know, seeing some of the teams talk about how they do it. You know, some of them, one of the cooler programs I heard somebody come up with was each team member was given like 12 envelopes with a letter to send to people in their lives that could support the team. I thought that was genius. You know, who wants to support us than our loved ones, you know? So you send mm-hmm. out, you get $20 from 10 people. All of a sudden you got $200. You can get a 2 nights in the hotel, and it's on me, you know? So it's, mm-hmm. it's pretty cool to see the fundraising opportunities that they do. And hopefully the next level is seeing the universities really come out and support them like they do those other activities and sports that we're so familiar with.
Yeah, and this is obviously another level. Like you said, it might not be as recognized as, you know, some of the really big sports at a particular university, but this is clearly organized. It's clearly dedicated. To go out and ask for support at this point just seems very practical.
Absolutely.
And not as much of a stretch, I guess, is what mm-hmm. I'm saying. You know, you think of some people like, hey man, I want to, you know, travel halfway across the country to go like play some frisbee golf. That's not at all really what's happening here. I mean, it is, but on a whole nother level.
Well, it's interesting, so much
more legitimate,
because I've been seeing very similar kind of move with my son's high school robotics team. You know, they made the world championships this year. They can only take a small crew, but watching them realize suddenly, oh crap, this is going to literally run us $40,000 to get 20 kids from Wisconsin to Houston for 5 days, hotels, travel, all this stuff. And then watching them come together to start to raise funds, reach out to the community, look for sponsors. It's a very similar thing. And you can see how some people on the team really understand and know the right people to contact and how yeah. to contact them. And it's literally mm-hmm. a life skill.
Yeah. It's like a small business in a sense. I would say for a robotics team, rather than like most teams wanting to do car washes, they should just build a car wash and automate the
just
system.
Automate. I'm sure they would.
Yeah. Anyway. So speaking of money, speaking of support and sponsorship, I don't know if criticism is the right word, but maybe it's a misnomer or a misunderstanding, but some have felt like with the location and the support that comes in, a lot of people have, maybe a lot is a strong word, some have felt like Innova is some form of exclusive underwriter and or kind of has an overarching support or heavy arm or not. Maybe just explain the relationships with manufacturers, supporters, to what degree an Innova or someone else does mm-hmm. or doesn't support, we'll say, the entire operation or program.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's a really cool setup that Disc Golf has. You know, we have these opportunities to kind of dig in and look at things in that way. But in my mind, it's really just a testament for the ones that are supporting the growth of the game. You know, you can turn around and somebody says, oh, you know, Innova's benefiting from this, or it's an Innova College Disc Golf thing. It's like, well, yeah, but they're the ones supporting it. You know, they're the ones. It's not a massive money making operations by any means. And mm-hmm. the fact that, you know, they're able to underwrite it in that way is a testament to the beauty of it. Honestly, I would turn that one right around on itself all day.
Yeah. And I again, I think when people don't run events and or can't think outside of a brief snapshot, you have to think kind of bigger picture. Like you said, if someone is supporting something at a higher level than any other person, and then they happen to in some way be benefit and or come out ahead in any capacity, like, well, that kind of makes sense. That's kind of how things operate sometimes.
Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And you have an opportunity to step up. Others have the opportunity to step up, whether it's to create something else or and or just become actively involved yourself. There's a lot of ways that I feel like others can be involved. And it feels like this woe is me mentality sometimes when people are like, well, so-and-so, you know, totally owns that or is, you know, gets all the benefits from it. Well, yeah, why don't you put in some legwork, you put in some money, you put in the effort, and you too could benefit. That's kind of how a lot of things work.
Yeah, and I mean, the interesting part, like, you know, the college disc golf and the team, at, especially at the championship, you know, we are so open to working with everybody that's interested in supporting it. You know, our second biggest supporter and contributor for the event is Discraft. Mm-hmm. You know, Bob Giulio and Mike Wagner and the team up there, you know, we rang the bell and said, hey, do y'all want to be involved? And they were like, absolutely.
Awesome.
And so they showed up, you know, we had Chuck in the Discraft wagon down there selling all the new Tour Series discs. And at the end of the day, we're so excited to see anybody out there, you know, reach out. My email's, you know, chad.sullivan@innovadiscgolf.com. Give me an email. It doesn't matter whether you throw one disc or the other, or you wear this jersey over this jersey. We're here to collaborate. We're here to work together and to grow this thing. We're not here to take home a bunch of money from this, you know, operation. It's hilarious to see, you know, I take in some of the Reddit stuff, you know, I'd be silly to say that I don't, you know, it's part of seeing where you can improve, you know, the constructive criticisms where I like to focus, but it's always good to see a good troll job on the internet. You know, it's keeps you entertained, keeps you fired up. And, you know, anybody who was there this week at the College Disc Golf National Championships knows that, you know, we put on the best show that we could and everybody had a great time. If you didn't, I hate to hear it. Give me a shout. Let's talk about it. Let's figure it out. Yeah, yeah. Let's figure out why. Cause man, all I saw was smiling faces and loud voices and high energy. It was incredible.
So with that, what's on the list? You know, every tournament director says, you know, the planning for 2025 started, you know, before the final putt dropped in 2024. So I assume you would tell me the same as a good event director. But what is on the list? How do you grow? What does growth look like? How do you expand? What do you worry about? What's on the list?
The schedule was something that I was very keen on this year. Going into it, you know, coming out of last year, college disc golf. One of the cool parts is it is just disc golf, disc golf, disc golf, disc golf. And at the end of the day, as an event director, I have to look at a schedule and see the things that can go wrong. Right? One, if you've got three rounds scheduled for a day, I'm thinking about a thunderstorm. You know, I'm not thinking like, oh, wow, that's a lot of golf holes. I'm so excited to go out there and do it. Well, you got to see what you don't know is coming, you know. So looking at the schedule, that was something this year. I think it turned out, you know, pretty awesome. It was smooth. You know, one of the smoothest events, honestly, I'd have to give a shout out to the team on that one. I think our course TD, and you know, y'all have seen the major multi-course setup come together 100 times, and it's something to behold. But like our course TD team, we had to be over 100 and something years of experience. We had, you know, Jason Schwacki, Jonathan Poole, Joe Rotan, Henry Childress. I mean, you just think of the names and all of the tournaments and majors, you know, all of that experience pointed in a thoughtful and planned out direction. We were set up for success and being able to look at next year and say, hey, you know, this day, let's do this or this rotation. We went doubles, singles, singles or singles, doubles. Let's switch it up and do this a little bit different. I have a notepad in my phone that's already deep, you know, something didn't go perfect. I'd do my very best to jump on the phone and write a note, you know, just don't forget while it's fresh and hopefully we'll go through here and have some meetings and just continue to try and elevate the experience.
Is there a cap? Is there a number cap that you're really like, here's the hard set number of just participants I think we can feasibly host?
For sure. And I think, you know, that was one of the big hurdles this year, bringing it to Rock Hill. You know, we had to create venues. We had the Winthrop course. We've got all kinds of experience. But the reality is we've never hosted a disc golf event at Winthrop in the spring. Mm-hmm. So there was a whole new slew. And as you know, we're on the athletic, you know, area for the entire event, and we've never worked with those sports before. You know, we know the cross country coach and the soccer coach in the fall. We've been
sure.
kind of hanging out together and making it work for a long time, but we had all kinds of new challenges to come up with and creating the venues this year. You know, we don't have to do a lot of that work next year as it stands, so we're able to put a little bit more energy and stuff into the pregame. And you know, to your point about capped, I think so. You know, at the end of the day, you can go for as wide of an event as you want, and it's really limited by the venues available to you. And being able to take that, you know, the budget and create something that's special, you know, you can get too big, honestly. I think, especially if you get out from under your skis, you know, it's like, oh, let's host 9 courses next year. Let's shoot mm-hmm. for 1500 humans and, you know, maybe we'll get there someday, but you know, thoughtful growth is where I like to live.
I mean, I wonder if maybe the long-term plan is you start dividing out Division 1, Division 2, you know, if you have mm-hmm. enough Division 1 or way more Division 2 or Division 3, obviously, you maybe start to look at splitting that and saying sure. like, oh, guess what? Well, this Winthrop is going to be the Division 1 and Division 2 is going to be hosted a week later. And it's at this course mm-hmm. or it's in this city or this state, or it's, you know, of course, I mean, those are pipe dreams. Those are things that we can only dream certainly. that we have so many college students that want to play that we can do that. It's like everyone talking about splitting off the FPO, the FPO tour. And it's like, yeah, that's a great idea when we get there, you know, when you have enough that FPO can, you know, support a full 90 players or whatever that number is and be a self-sustaining tour that we have got the competitors. I could see that happening where you have a separate division weekend.
Yeah. And I'll just mm-hmm. tag that with, I'm not going to tell you how to do anything. Cause, that same, everything he just said, sounds like legit, like pie yeah. in the sky sounds great, but then I think about your staff, your resources, everything that goes along
see, with it I was thinking whole different staff, yeah, whole different crew.
Like, okay, then you start rounding up.
No, that's what I'm saying. Having, you know, we can split up these, you know, we can split up these majors. We can bid for them. Guess what? This team bids for the Division 1 thing. We have a different team in Georgia, or which is actually really close.
I'm not going to tell you how to do more work. That's what I'm
saying. I want him to do less work. I want somebody else to do more work.
That sounds like something that would come together pretty well.
All right. I just heard a volunteer in Johnny V.
I'd be happy.
That's right. Yeah.
We're getting it done right now.
Wisconsin's hosting something.
Johnny V.
That would be cool.
Johnny's taking it on. I like it.
That would be cool.
Real quick. Before we cut you loose, first of all, Emac just jumped in the chat. He says, great event, which is awesome to see that he's out there. And maybe we should catch up with Emac here a little later tonight if he's still around. But he does say that in the chat. And then before we cut you loose and wrap this up, of course, you know, we had you on. We've talked about USDGC just, and I know USDGC is, you know, all of almost a full 6 months away in reality of. But I'm sure the planning, the conversations, the meetings, those are already took place this week and before this. I know that. But real quick, any insight, you know, pull back the curtain, anything that you want to quickly throw out there with regards to yet another version of USDGC later on in October?
We're so excited to keep the train rolling towards the fall. You know, hosted majors and successful ones at that in Rock Hill is what we do at this point. And, you know, I don't have anything special to drop on here. No exclusives, but okay. There's a lot going on and it's going to be special. I think, you know, year 25 is behind us and mm-hmm. 26 is going to be something cool. The course is always going to deliver like it did this week. You know, there's something about that property. I know, you know, there's the naysayers that say, oh, let's get this in the woods. And, you know, there's got to be something better than a college campus. I don't know. That place is special. You step onto that property, you start throwing circles in the air, and just things happen. It always delivers, and we're excited to come back in October and, you know, do it again.
Awesome. Well, with that, any parting shots, any final words, anything you'd like to say? Once we cut you loose, we'll read through a few more of the champions and whatnot, and a few more of the results. But before we do that, anything else you want to say before we let you go tonight?
I have to shout out, you know, there's no way we'll hit everybody that deserves a moment of recognition for the week that just happened. The teams, the players, they came out, they brought the energy, they showed up, they played, they had a blast. Seeing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of smiles on the course, it was special. Seeing it come together was awesome. You know, the courses, Andrew Duvall, Michael Shugart, those guys are absolutely legendary course building, designing wizards. They go out there and put literal blood, sweat, and tears into these disc golf courses that we come in and enjoy. You know, the PDGA and the team there, working with them for the tournament, you know, like you pointed out, it was 8 tournaments going on at the same time. And Rebecca Duffy, Todd Lyon, that whole crew. I mean, Todd was a mad scientist in the lab cooking up tee sheets. And you know, the TD hat is different at that level. Honestly, it's so much of delegation and just kind of pointing people in the right direction with what they're good at and getting everybody to focus on you know, the do your job mentality. I'm sitting here wearing a Patriots hat, you know. It's how it happens. It's how the good things happen. You know, you can't cover it all. And I, you know, Monday I'm out there in the morning, or the first day I'm out there putting water on tee pads and doing the thing. Cause like, I'm just not settled in yet. You know, you get that feeling. It's like, oh, this needs to get done. So you just jump in the golf cart and do it. But the reality is you just can't do that and cover it all. You have to find a team to get that stuff done. And we've got the best in the world. Shout out to everybody who helped make it happen.
Awesome. Well, congratulations, of course, to all of the players, all the competitors. Just like we were saying, just the opportunity to be there, to be part of it, feels like it's a lifetime memory that so many of these players.
One of those experiences you and I need to go down and do. We've done almost every disc golf experience imaginable.
Bring it. Yeah, that does.
We'll get y'all. Yeah, we'll get y'all a sweet spot over on, you know, the first or the 18th hole. We'll get that college game day atmosphere going.
I love it. I love it. Bring it. I'm ready for it. That sounds like a good time for sure. I've been involved in a couple of them, namely back at IDGC a few years ago. I got a little bit of the coverage and talked to a few of the winners then, and I would love to be involved in the future, because you guys are just, all of you continue to do great things, and it's been awesome watching the evolution of it, because like we said, it's moments that so many of these players will never forget, and all part of their formative disc golf experience overall. So Chad, thank you so much for joining us. Congrats to all the players, but congrats to your staff. Congrats to the PDGA and Innova, all the sponsors and the supporters, like you said, yes. Discraft, and just everyone that had any hand on making the event successful or supporting people that then made the event successful or participated in, you know, just an all hands on deck effort by so many people. So thank you so much for joining us tonight and breaking it all down.
You're welcome. Thank you as all. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks a good night. Thanks a lot, Chad. Take care. See ya.
Good night. That guy's a good human.
Yeah. What an awesome experience. And I can't say it enough. Just congrats to everyone that took advantage of the opportunity to be part of it, because it is something that has grown and developed over in the last couple of decades. And I'll be the first to admit, I remember not rolling my eyes, but more of sighing of like, wow, that seems like a tall task. And thank God people like, you know, your Pete Mays and your John Bakers and like all of those people didn't just sigh or you know, refuse to take it on. They did take it on, and hundreds and dozens of others, and have continued to, you know, have some part in growing and elevating it to where it is today. And so congrats to all of them. And it's obviously only going to get bigger and better as we move forward. And we've had EMAC on the show, and I've been there at Emporia State, and as a testament to how serious disc golf is becoming, and, you know, with the Yuli scholarship and foundation that they're doing, and just things of that nature, it's just incredible that we have all these things that are truly unfolding in our lifetime, because we didn't necessarily think that this would
be practical. Are you saying we're old?
I'm saying you're old.
I'm older than you now. All right, let's talk about some of the other results for the collegiate national championships. We'll finish up with the D1 teams. As we said, UNC Charlotte with that awesome come from behind win with the big putt. Second place, University of Cincinnati. Third place, always the bridesmaid in almost every sport, NC State, who took basically, they missed the Final Four in March Madness. They made the Final Four and missed the championship game. Ooh. So they were in third place, basically, for the Final Four. They're in third place here. We got fourth place, Ferris State, which I cannot read without thinking of Ferris Bueller, no matter how hard I try.
I don't blame you.
Fifth place, Emporia State University. Congratulations, EMAC, and your team. Sixth place, Texas A&M. Three-way tie for seventh between Liberty, the Ohio State University, and Oklahoma Christian. So that is basically your top 10 for the D1 team event. We'll quickly walk over to the D1 women's now. Singles. This is the singles event. Kelly White takes this down, shooting a 4-under par, best from UNCX, besting Genesis Beck from NC State Luna Wolves, who shot a 3-under. So looking at the round ratings, it looks like she shot a 908 rated round, which was 60 points higher than what she is rated.
Dang.
To win. So congratulations, Kelly White. Third place, Atlanta. I'm going to go with Krieger. It'd be Kruger. Sorry. From Emporia State, the ladies black. Fourth place, a three-way tie between Julia DiMartino from Liberty, Taylor Chosick from University of Oregon, Haley Bunnell from Illinois State University. So that rounds out your top five in the D1 women's singles. And then we'll talk about the D1 women's team event. Liberty takes it down, as we talked about, a two-person team here. They shot 12-under, besting Clemson by 2 strokes. Third place, Emporia State University Black. Fourth place, Milligan University. Fifth place, NC State Luna Wolves. So that's your D1 women's team. Terry, should we finish up? Should we go through D2 singles and team? We can do some of that real quick, I think. Let me just open up these to make
sure.
Give
us the top three in each.
I'll give you the top three in each.
Podium finishers.
All right, podium finishers. D2 singles. You've got Grayson Lifto from Liberty, Justin Durham from Texas Tech B, and Jake Rice from UNC Charlotte B. Going over to the D2 team, you have UNC A winning this one over. Oh my God, this one came down to a tie as well. They both shot 28. So obviously UNC in a playoff over University of Dayton. And in a tie for third place between UNC Charlotte and Iowa State University. And we'll quickly go over to the D3, the singles. Will Hewitt from UNC Charlotte wins by a single stroke. God, so many close battles here. I love it. Over Graham Clausen from Liberty. Tie for third place between Colby Sheffers from UNC and Ian Rankin from Liberty. So Liberty did, man. They showed out. That's for sure. And then finally, the D3 team championship. Liberty takes this one over NC State by quite a few, 11 strokes. So congratulations to Liberty. In third place, UNC Charlotte.
Dang.
Yeah, that's first of all, it's quite a mouthful. Second of all, well-deserved. That's a lot of work to get put into that stuff.
Awesome. Well, again, congratulations. It may sound cliche, but like just being there sounds like you won in some degree. And it is very cool to see as the growth and development of the collegiate disc golf scene continues to expand and show out, as you say. So love it. All right. Excuse me. Other things going on in terms of golf this weekend. We've got a couple other A tiers that were taking place, and I think Johnny is pulling up. Yeah. So we'll quickly read through them. I feel like of all the A tiers, this one that we're about to cover, definitely had the most shine in the sense that that's where it felt like our players, if they didn't take the weekend off, this is where a lot of our upper echelon players found themselves heading to, which makes perfect sense. Obviously, a very highly regarded course that has continued to win over the hearts of a lot of players and a lot of fans and of all different skill levels in the last few years, and has been highly talked about and anticipated. And so go ahead, Johnny, what do we got?
The 6th annual Persimmon Ridge Retreat presented by MVP Disc Sports. This is from Greenbrier, Arkansas. Tournament director, Steve Jones. All right, let's talk about the MPO. As you said, this one, if you played this weekend, odds are as a pro, you played here. Jeremy Kohling wins this for his first A-tier win in 6 years. So congratulations to Jeremy Kohling, shooting a 1040, 1038, and rocking it in the last round with a 1061. Takes home $1,565, besting Drew Gibson by 2 strokes. In third place was Raven Newsom. Fourth place, Nicholas Antala. Fifth place, Luke Sampson. So congratulations to your top 5 players. Over on the FPO side, not a shock. Kristen Tatar wins by 5 strokes over Owen Scoggins. So I know, I think when I say not a shock, it's never a surprise when Kristen wins, but Owen's been giving her a run for her money for quite a while. In fact, Owen had the lead after the first round. She shot a 52. Well, Kristen shot a 53, and then it was tied after the second round when Kristen shot a 49 and Owen shot a 50, but then comes down to the third round and Kristen Tatar shoots a 986 over Owen's 940 rated round. So that is how your FPO topped out. In third place was Maria Oliva. In fourth place, Lisa Fakis. And a tie for fifth place between Rebecca Cox and Kona Star Montgomery. So probably one of the first times Kona's cashed in at a bigger event in, I would say, quite a while. So she's on the comeback, it feels like, after her medical issues. She shot a 970, a 951, and then a 921. Kona's currently rated, I feel it's low for her, but everything accepted. She's only rated 922. So to see those 970s and 950s come out has got to feel good for her. So congratulations to everyone who cashed, but congratulations to Kona out there. And I saw a lot of the players take in this event, as well as the Eclipse. You could, if you watched your social media, you saw almost all these players kind of take a little time. This is right on the way, obviously, to Jonesboro. It's real nearby, which is why this one made a lot of sense. There is another event we can talk about real quick. The 29th annual Texas State Disc Golf Championships. And you're like, what? No, John, you talked about that last week.
What?
Huh?
I'm confused.
Yeah. Well, I know, Terry. This is actually the Masters division.
Oh.
Winning this one, our good friend, Dutch Napier, besting Travis Powell, Patrick Blazek. Patrick's a name we don't say a lot much these days because he's in the Masters field, but just a great player. Tied with Patrick, Jeremy Mount, and running out your top 5, Austin McNabb. And in your FP40 division, Juliana Korver by like 18 strokes over Jenny Umstead. Congratulations to JK, taking home $607. In the MP50, Jay Redding winning this one. In the FP50, Rochelle Browning. So that is your Texas State's Disc Golf Championships for the Masters and above division. The old people.
Our folk,
yeah. Some of these people are younger than us.
When we say old, we mean it lovingly, because we with them.
We with them, yeah. Some of these MP40s. Younger than us.
Yeah. So congrats to all of them. It was interesting, I just think, generically to say, after such a stretch of courses, but also more so a stretch of back-to-back-to-back events, especially from the FPO field, it was interesting to see some taking the weekend off as opposed to those that didn't. And two of those that come to mind, of course, are your top 2 finishers in FPO. When you think about the women who, and I say this professionally and lovingly, the women who don't need the money as much, being Kristen and Owen, who are two of our most successful money earners, they chose to still compete this weekend. And
which
I think that to finish the point, though, yes, that says a lot about getting to the property and participating in the hype that is the property, because it is so highly regarded, understandably. But at the same time, when you talk about rest and recovery, Owen is the number one person on the top of your mind in the FPO field when those phrases get thrown out. Owen electing to still play this weekend, and Kristen obviously wanting to play as well. And I'm not second guessing or challenging them on doing so. I think it's just of note. And I know Kristen, one of her posts, even maybe today or yesterday, talked about the stretch that she's been on, her and Silver have been on, in terms of playing consecutive weekends. How I think she said she's looking at three more weekends and then a much needed break, in which after Champions Cup, I'm guessing right away on Monday, which is actually quite perfect to be in Peoria and then to look to have an international flight, likely out of Chicago, out of O'Hare, probably on Monday, to get out of town to go back home and rest and recover. So, you know, pushing through and wanting to see the property and then playing another event, a competitive event. I get all that.
And that's kind of where I was going to say, especially with our overseas competitors, because you see, like I said, Nick Letts, who doesn't clearly probably need to play if he doesn't want to, getting as much golf time in here while you're in the U.S., filling your calendar makes some sense. Because if you are going to take a multi-week break, for Owen, I don't necessarily know if it makes sense. I don't know if it doesn't make sense for Owen. I always feel like if there's money to be won, Owen's going to show up. You know, I think she is just a competitive human being that wants to win and wants to play. And if she's on the road, I get the feeling that she's kind of like, well, why wouldn't I play? So that's how I feel about Owen, her mentality. Both of them, as you said, could take the week off and no one would judge them, and no one and everyone would just be like, oh, that's a good idea to rest up. I don't know if it's in them right now.
Well, clearly not, as they put on a pretty good show for everybody. And when it was all said and done, we saw Kristen come out victorious. So,
and speaking of.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kristen. 999. Still at the 999. She didn't DNF. She didn't quit. That is her rating still. She unfortunately was not able to push over to the 1,000 rated.
Rigged.
So she has another month now of us kind of just sitting watching. Can she average over 1,000 for the next whatever number of events? You know, she's going to, you know, she's, yeah, I don't know. Someone's going to figure out what's going to drop off and what she's going to need to shoot. It's always out there if you look hard enough. But ultimately, Kristen still 999. Owen Scoggins, I think, jumped like 5 or 6 ratings points. Mm. It was kind of ridiculous. And which is big up when you're near the top of your field. Like someone like you or me jumps 5 or 6 rating points. It's like, oh, cool. I had a good couple events. When you're playing that consistently and you're playing at the top of your field, it's just not usually something you see. You're not going to see probably Anthony Barella jump 5 ratings points or Calvin Heimberg or anyone near the top of the MPO field go from like a 940 to a 945 usually. But to see Owen jump 5 or 6 points, amazing. It just shows how well she's been playing over the last month or two. So congratulations to Owen Scoggins.
Yeah, speaking of which, I was just thinking about, I did see a post earlier today, Gannon Burr talking about getting to his highest rating ever at 1049. And with that, I was curious as to what he needed to get there. And that was 3 points for Gannon Burr to get to 1049 in today's rating.
Whatever, bro. Call me when you're 1050.
Yeah, I don't even want to hear it until then. Like, are you even good? Stuff. Okay. Yeah. 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 Gannon surprisingly not playing anywhere this weekend. And I'll say that.
As Pike as Alden's not.
I'm just saying, like, it is. He's one of those guys who you feel like right now, because he's younger with a lot of the younger crew he rolls with, he's, I feel like, least likely to take a weekend off. And I'm glad he did. So it's, I think he was actually home back in Iowa for the weekend. But did he have a dental procedure? Am I thinking of someone else? I know Jessica Weiss is trying to have one. Yeah, you'd think I'd keep all this stuff straight.
I don't know how you keep everyone's dental.
Some of them are more public than others.
I so know.
Some secrets I shouldn't be sharing. But I know Jessica Weiss. Maybe yeah. I'm sure the chat knows somewhere. But
let me know when you start getting the MP40s colonoscopy schedules. Yes, okay, schedules. So please.
Actually, last weekend.
Oh, geez. Oh, no. I was kidding.
So pulled out in the middle of hole 9. I don't know. No. Excuse me.
I just murdered Terry with that one.
All right. Anyway, good stuff. So that's what we saw. I mean, talk about clearly when we're putting a tour together, they're putting the tour together. Johnny and I don't do anything. When people are putting tours together and tour opportunities together, hitting in between two stops is first and foremost the most logical thing you can do. But then when you happen to be near the eclipse and somewhere in that just general vicinity on top of it, you're really, a lot of things, pardon the pun, are really aligning at that point. Some player, obviously in Jonesboro, we saw some guys having fun with it yesterday. Ezra Aderhold, along with, who was it that was posting with him? Connor O'Reilly, were throwing a hole wearing their glasses, and they were trying to throw onto the island, wearing their solar eclipse glasses,
which are more or less a blindfold for everyone that has put those on
as I did yesterday. So people really getting into it. And then you saw, I think I saw Paige and Eric Oakley and a number of others, at what I believe was an eclipse festival party gathering and completely consuming it in that sense. So I love seeing it by all the different people taking it in, and dare I say a few of these players actually enjoying life outside of just throwing the actual disc. So it was pretty cool to see. And I think a lot of people enjoyed their time down there, you know, after the fact come Monday. So I know Kona and everybody, well, let's just put it that way. Everybody posted, which was great. Good to see.
All right, we'll talk a little bit about some PDGA news. There's not a lot going on. Obviously, when you have 8 majors going on at once, the PDGA is a little bit busy, and I understand that they probably don't have a lot of time for news. But what we did see this week was an opportunity to own a piece of the IDGC. So there's the whole background with the infestation of the southern pine beetle, blah, blah, blah. We all know that story already. But where you come in, is what it says, is to support the project of obviously the new W.R. Jackson course. They're auctioning off some of the IDGC's most iconic equipment, including the targets that caught the throws of some of the world's top athletes during the 2022 and 2023 PDGA Champions Cup, a PDGA major. So if you happen to lose that event, maybe you auction it off and then you destroy it or something. I don't know. Burn it in effigy. But there are some things, winning bids. You can talk to the PDGA about that. You can go to the PDGA news site and you can get all the information that you need for some of this memorabilia and what it's out there. So if you're looking to help, if you're a collector of some sort, this might be right up your alley. But go ahead and check out the PDGA's website for more information. And registrations open for all 4 2024 PDGA World Championships now. So
holy cow.
5 days ago. So please don't miss out. Don't be the person that misses out and then complains.
They never told me about it.
How come I didn't get an email? It wasn't on my TikTok.
Yeah. When in fact you did get 6 emails and 4 reminders and 9 podcasts.
But it was to your old email account because you forgot the password to that one and have a new one now. So
yeah, so if you're eligible and thinking about playing, I'll say it about majors as you'd say about pretty much any other event. if there's a chance you're going and you're very interested, I would err on the side of signing up with the possibility of learning later. You might have to withdraw for whatever reason, maybe accept some form of penalty financially, possibly depending on the withdrawal date. That's a lot easier than being shut out because it's filled. And then you saying, well, I wanted to get in, and now you're mad because you're on the wait list and you had an invite, you had a spot that you were eligible for, but you passed on it. So now you want somebody else's spot because some deadline has passed. So go out there and take care of it if you think you're going to play or participate.
Sounds awesome.
I was going to look for that link here. I had it a moment ago. Where did it go? Because I would like to just go ahead and post that right into the...
Which link?
For the auction.
Oh, the piece that IDGC?
Yeah, and maybe post it right into the chat for anyone that's just following along.
Well, I can post the link to the PDGA site.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
All right, perfect.
And I'm sorry, did you mention that it's all up in, what, about 3.5 weeks from now? There's one specific ending date. I actually took a look at pretty much every item.
Oh, did you?
When this came out a few days ago. I was like, is there anything that I'm personally tied to at the PDGA's IDGs or at the IDGC that I would specifically want? And there was nothing that, I mean, it's all cool and it's great, but the last thing I need is
more stuff,
is more disc golf memorabilia, especially if it's talking about coming halfway across the country and it's of a larger nature. I don't need it right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, it all ends auction style, and I believe it all ends on one specific day. So make sure you click on it and follow along.
Go check it out.
As Johnny alluded to, just real quick, this is the fact that ratings came out again today, and I hope that went well for you if you think it should have or not.
It was great. My rating didn't change.
Mm.
I think you need to play events in order for it to change.
Sometimes that helps.
Yeah.
Or factors in. There's certainly.
Hey, I'm playing some events this year, so
don't worry. Couple other quick things is that this weekend, of course, we're going to be seeing the Jonesboro Open presented by Westside, which is a change up. Last few years, we've seen the likes of, I believe we've seen Prodigy, and we've also seen, was it Latitude-y maybe even for a year? Oh, and it was once Prodiscus.
Prodiscus is what I was thinking.
So new title sponsor this year in Westside. Thanks to Westside, of course, for being supportive of it. I think the biggest news, and I have yet to fully dissect it, is...
The course changes,
which... If I'm correct, they're just being renumbered. Do we have any?
There might be just a few tweaks, but ultimately most of the holes are identical and they are just renumbering the holes.
So they're starting in a different spot and having the holes renumbered. So that will be the biggest thing to get used to. I'm at a point of being at Jonesboro or involved with the event pretty much every year since introduction to the tour. So I guarantee you on more than one occasion this weekend, we're going to be on a particular hole and I'll call it by the wrong hole number. I promise you, I don't know how you would expect otherwise. You've been calling the same hole, the same thing for 7 or 8 years now. You expect me not to F it up. You just expect too much of me then, if that's the case. So I will do my best, but we are going to see a new numbering scheme for the holes out here. And I have yet to look. I just know that's in the works. That's something I'll dive into in the next day or so as Johnny's kind of pulling it up.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up. It looks like the website's a little bit slow. There we go.
The old, that now is going to,
I think it's old hole 4 12? Or 14? 12.
14 is the one.
Oh, yeah.
Simon aced 1 year.
Yep.
So I believe this is the old 13.
Yes. Yes. It's the one. Yep.
The very difficult. Oh, and we're seeing a new FPO. Oh, no, that's the next hole.
That's hole 2. So, I mean, we might as well put this up.
Yeah, for might as well share it with the world.
Let's share it with the world a little bit.
Give
so,
you guys, a little preview here. Let's
see if I can shrink this up a little bit for everybody. All right. Yeah. So this is going to be hole one. You're right. This obviously shooting all over the OB. This is the straight ahead hole with the log right in front of the basket where it's a little uphill. I think that was old 14, 13. I mean,
I want to say 13 now. Yeah, kind of a few. We've seen a few park jobs on it and phenomenal shots, but this for some of you, if you're very much newer, this is the Casey White tilt throw in hole.
Yes,
is what this is. So that will trigger a few of you and jog your memory in that regard. Now hole two
is different because it used to just be, I think, a little
279 foot hyzer,
a little hyzer over to this patch right here, yeah, between the set of trees.
It must have been just too easy,
which. I mean, I'll wait to see it. I kind of liked the little hyzer because it was a little more exciting. We saw
there's always rollaways on the hill.
Yep, and we saw aces, hole in ones. Mm-hmm. So to make it a 360, I understand making it more difficult, putting it by the trees off, you know, by the tree to the right over here. That's fine. I'll take a look. I'm not, you know. Then for the most part, you're going to see the same things going on now. Hole three, which is the old. Like I said, hole 16.
No, this is the old 8. We're going a different direction now.
Oh, you're.
This is the one that had the massive roll away with.
You're right. Yeah.
Macbeth, where he then canned the putt from twice as far.
Okay.
After this insane roll away.
Oh, that's right. Because there's the little bridge here.
That's what I'm guessing that is.
I don't know.
Yeah, I believe we go back that direction. Okay.
And I haven't been on the property myself, so it's hard for me to imagine just by looking at the holes. I'm trying to imagine.
Okay, which makes sense. This is the old 9.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the old 9 is hole number 4.
So I'm glad you guys, everyone could join us for Terry's research today.
Exactly. Thank you. This is the old 10 where the playoff took place last year on the FPO side with Cap Merch along with Haley King. And then this is the one where Haley King played from the wrong lie.
Played from Paige Pierce's disc.
She played from Paige's lie. See, this is a little trip down memory lane. Just to add on to this.
It's one of the reasons why I love when you're in the booth because, and no offense to Charlie or even Ian, they sometimes don't have a lot of those references in your head. So let's say we see Haley King on hole 6. You're going to be able to be like, oh, yeah, a couple of years ago, Haley played from the wrong lie. She got penalized, blah, blah, blah. Wrong
purple disc.
The wrong purple disc.
Which she also did last year on a different hole.
Correct.
Or Paige had done that, whatever. Okay, so this is also, and that Mando that you see in the bottom of your screen, if you're watching along, was implemented year one because of Simon Lazat.
Because Simon would try to, or he did, take the left spot to end up over here to give himself a straight shot. Shot at
and
it.
A look at an eagle. So that is kind of officially deemed the Simon Mando hole. This is the one, I think Kevin Jones had a massive roll away here in the last year or two, but this is the one that goes up and over.
Too soon still, Terry.
And then,
Too soon.
Yep, plays over to there. And then, so that's right. 7.
Yep, this is still 7, but this is for MPO. This was the FPO 7. This is the MPO 7. So it's the same hole, obviously just longer for MPO.
Yep, two different tees. Yep. That's, I think, been standard. And then this is the little uphill shot. There's been a lot of rollaways. I can't attribute to just one. But this is the kind of uphill shot that just normally then plays to. We're going to be right back where hole now 1 is. So this is the one that is prior to that where a lot of players push to the right side and or, you know, that's kind of the mistake that gets made is being off to the right and down there.
And it's a longer one for MPO.
Which has, I think, been pretty standard. So now we're going to what I believe is the old 17. Excuse me, 17.
Yeah, 17 with all the woods.
Would be 17.
Where sometimes we see players get caught up in the woods here, and it's very difficult to get out. We've seen people throw rollers on this.
Yeah, so that's why what we're seeing, though, too, is I'm guessing with this being, you know, at hole 9 and where we're at, if you look on the, again, if you're following along video-wise, just to the left and south, you see the dotted line, which is actually an OB line that is on the bottom of the screen here. Yep. That's where all of the overflow parking has been, which I'm guessing now they're making the main parking lot. And that's why we're seeing the change, because this tee pad that you're looking at right now is less than 200 feet from hole number 1. So we've played that loop to come back here, and then this will be the start of of essentially the back nine. But I think it's because all of the parking,
trying to accommodate more spectators.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm guessing is going on. Then we see this is what used to be 18 from here. And then, and then I wonder if we just, keep going. And then that's the old hole one, which is 11. Hole 12.
Which is the old hole two.
Yep. I'm going to assume this is going to be the same. Three, same. Four,
longer.
That's 13.
Yep. Yes. Yep. This is the one. Isn't this the one with that eagle? Or no, I'm thinking
Macbeth.
Yeah.
Macbeth hit off the bottom of the basket and then rolled back out of bounds after a near ace run.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things that's happened on this hole. Are they creating a short? I'm sorry, scroll back up. Are they creating? Or
that's 13. Maybe, this is 14.
Okay, so the FPO pad is a par 5, but look at there's a new basket.
Off and look at,
there's also a PDGA approved waiver. Go scroll down.
Okay.
There's going to be a new M. What is that basket in the trees? Is that a basket?
Yeah, this is for hole 15's basket over here, I think. And this is hole 1's basket.
Oh, we're on 14.
Yeah, so these black ones just show you the other baskets that are there. So you got...
I'm confused about the next hole. Then is...
No, this is...
No, this is the old... Okay, this is the old... 15.
Yeah. Where everybody,
I'm thinking of the old 5.
Correct. No, this is, because this one has the drop zone. A lot of times people end up off to the right in the woods here and they have to either pitch out or they throw it over. There used to be, and it looks like maybe they're still there, a row of trees that kind of protects the basket a little bit, but they're less and less these days.
Interesting.
So,
okay. All right.
Yep.
And then the old hole 6, which is now 15.
Yeah, this looks like it just kind of rolls through then almost the exact same.
Okay.
Just different.
Yeah, so really, as you can see.
It's just a reorg of.
Yeah. Utilizing, I think, the number one goal, utilizing what I believe is the much larger parking lot that if you're on the tee of the old 17, OB and off to the left is a massive field, and that I'm guessing is now becoming the primary parking spot. If we're starting one where we are, which feels like it's truly the new hole one by previous year standards, feels like you're in the middle of nowhere. But they're clearly now getting us to a different parking lot and trying to make that the actual starting point. So anyway,
enough just to screw you up. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. So this weekend, after watching the women's championships, our producer put on Twitter one of the on-air hosts, his notes. And it truly was, it was an 8.5 by 11, two of them.
So to be clear, this is the final four basketball notes.
Yes, thank you. The final four women's basketball. And one of the on-air announcers, I don't know his name, but he's the host, and he's along with a female color commentator. And apparently his notes were posted for the game. His actual personal notes. Yep. It had the name of the player along with some details.
The number.
Numbers. And he was probably updating or keeping some stats as it was going. And he had a page for both teams listing out a bunch of the specifics
were
his notes.
Yeah, and I think I saw some quick notes as far as maybe things to tell, points to make about the player, those things.
Very chaotic looking, because these are his notes. These are his personal notes that he's doing and using for his broadcast. And our producer had posted a copy of those, because he saw them somewhere, posted them to Twitter, and then challenged me and said, is this what your show notes look like? Is this what your prep work looks like?
It was more of a joke than a challenge.
Oh, yeah, correct. I know. But what I'm getting at is what you just said a few minutes ago that I think back to. Of course, my memory's going to fail me. Continue to fail me as I only get older. Second of all, you can never be too over-prepared. So clearly, everybody could use some notes. But I do think about, sometimes there's something to be said about just sheer longevity of seeing the crazy stuff and being involved with a place like Jonesboro. from pretty much day number one, from the from driving down there, I think, in the middle of the night to get to the party, the player party, and the and what Brad and the rest of the crew have done to see what this property has become throughout all these years. And then just this event has grown with the Pro Tour as much as any other event, in my opinion. And maybe I'll have to think about some analogy for how that's happened throughout all these years. But this is a guy who went out to a piece of property, saw some potential, thought about the Pro Tour, and then just essentially manifested it in, with a lot of hard work and turned it into what it is today. And it's incredible. And of course, just, you know, as recently as last year, we saw James Conrad shooting a 17 under, and we've seen both Katrina Allen and Paige Pierce in previous years shoot some of the best golf of their life on this particular course.
Not Kelvin has been dominant year. Here lately.
What Calvin has done, and then the fact that you have people like Simon Lazat year one, literally, you know, getting rules changed, very much, very reminiscent, right, of what we just saw last year with Gannon Burr in the situation in Kansas City Wide Open, of him taking a route that wasn't necessarily thought about or, or, you know, intended for, and them making a rule mid tournament to adjust for it. Yeah, so. Pretty crazy. Awesome to see. And looking forward to this weekend. Needless to say, I will be in the booth.
In Bend
with Nate. And I believe Nate as well. I think it's both the Nates, Nate Doss and Nate Sexton. Nate Perkins will probably be on the ground, if I had to assume. That makes sense. Nathan Queen will probably be in the field. Maybe Nate Turner's out there playing. I don't know. We got more Nates. and then FPO will be myself and Valerie Jenkins. Do you have feature cards?
I don't know if this is public or not.
They used to make separate posts about these. Maybe we won't share them right now.
Well, but, I mean, you could kind of guess last year's winner is going to be on the feature card. That's Calvin and Cat merch.
And then a sponsor pick always happens.
A sponsor pick. Any there's guesses? An event. Well, it's a West Side event. So my guess is you're going to see, and I haven't even looked at it, but Matty Owen Sy is my guess.
Yeah.
There is a event pick and a kind of a DGPT pick, which is more of like a what they call like a storyline pick. So what's happening in the sport right now that maybe someone we want to feature. So you're going to see the biggest names in the sport at the top of the cards. So that's, you know, I'm excited. I'm looking at the MPO2 cards, and there's some names you don't see a lot of. There's one, I mean, Gannon Burr will be on it, but there's some other names that
we haven't seen as much lately.
So I'm excited to get some MPO2 coverage. But
okay, is that everything in the world of specifically in the world of disc golf that's relevant at the moment?
I think it is. I think we've covered more or less everything we need to cover for actual disc golf news and all that other crap.
Okay. Well, with it, I do think we get some solid work done, and I'm sure, I am positive that you learned something additional about the college disc golf scene tonight.
Oh, heck yeah, I did. So
that feels like a win in itself. And thank you to Chad for giving us those insights. And again, thank you to everyone that helped make that event successful. And it sounds like it was an awesome time, and I would like to be part of it moving forward. Hopefully it works out. For Johnny V, I'm the Disc Golf Guy. Thanks again to Chad for joining us. We're going to take a quick break, like under 2 minutes. We'll take a quick break here, and then when we come back, we'll have giveaways and some other non-disc golf chatter. And if you've got anything you want to share with us, questions you might have, get your keyboard all fired up and get ready to bring it to us. You can do it on Facebook, or even easier, do it to us right there in the chat of YouTube. That's podcast 501. We're going to take a quick break. Then we'll see you in the after show when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/SmashboxTV.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.